Hello? Oh, nice. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of HCF Third Culture Kid, where I, after a five-week or six-week break, have returned to share my thoughts, experiences, and conversations. Welcome, welcome. A big welcome to me for coming back after 6 weeks. This was, to kind of give some context, I'm re-recording this podcast because I realized I wasn't recording video. I record the video just so that I can have like a snippet, a clip that I can put on my Instagram. And then my audio, I wasn't recording out of the right audio input, so nothing really captured, which was very stupid of me. So I'm re-recording this podcast episode. Hopefully I can bring the same level of enthusiasm. It's a little late at night, but well, here we go. But yes, back to my explanation of the context of me coming back after 6 weeks. The podcast was something I was a little unfamiliar with after 6 weeks. I thought like after just 4 weeks, I would just be back at it, and I wouldn't have lost my familiarity with it. It'd be easy to come back on it. I'd know how to do it again. But nope. Granted, you know, it's more than 4 weeks right now. It's about 6 weeks. I feel like I've forgotten a little bit how to do the podcast. So it felt a little unfamiliar to me, and there was a little bit of unease coming back to it. But here I am, and I don't think it's going to be that bad. I mean, I did record, like I said, I recorded this podcast episode once before. And I did not set up the right software and the equipment. So I had a trial run. And it wasn't bad. It was fun. And it reminded me of why I've been doing this podcast again. And it's like a sort of like personal journal or a record of like my conversations with friends. It's like a diary of sorts. And yeah, I enjoy that. So, and that's what this should be about. I mean, I will work on my delivery, knowing and aware that there may be an audience. But I ultimately do this for me. And that's sufficient enough for me to get back to it. And so, yeah, welcome back to the listeners, and welcome back to me on this podcast after a kind of a long break. I was in Korea. I think I mentioned this in the beginning of the episode, and I mean, this episode I kind of just want to recap my trip to Korea. I was in Korea for about 4 weeks. I mean, just to summarize, my first week was a week of quarantine. At the time, you were required to quarantine for 7 days. So that's what I did. And then the following 2 weeks, I was going to spend time with friends and family. That's my vacation time. But then I got COVID, so I had to stay an extra week in Korea. And I was able to get out of Korea, even though I tested positive for COVID like the week prior to my departure, because after I tested positive for COVID, I then secured this certificate of recovery from a healthcare provider that then allowed me to leave the country, even though I tested positive just like 7 or 10 days ago. So that's kind of a summary of my trip, but I want to document this and share my thoughts on this because the trip, I haven't gone to Korea in like 2.5 years. This time felt a little different. I don't think I spent 4 weeks in Korea. Usually I spend 2 weeks-ish in Korea. So this is double the amount of time. And also I haven't seen my parents and like my family in like 2 years, 2.5 years. I usually see my family like every year at least. So this in many sense like doubled, or maybe is more exponential than that, but it really multiplied how memorable, how valuable this trip was for me. And that's why I wanted to share my thoughts on this. It was just very on an emotional level and how deeply it touched me. It was a little more than my other regular Korea trips. I don't know if it's the fact that rarity breeds value, because I haven't like traveled in like 2.5 years. Maybe that rarity made it feel more valuable. I don't know. But it was whatever the reasons were and whatever the contributory causes were. It was a very memorable, like a valuable trip. And all right, so let me just get it. Let me just share kind of my experiences and my thoughts on this Korea trip. The first one being getting on the airplane. That was different. For anybody who's traveled during the pandemic, I'm sure it was a different experience. I knew that if I did go to Korea, I would have to quarantine for 7 days, which was kind of a blocker for me to fully commit to going to Korea. But I had to go to Korea this time because my second nephew was born, and I missed my first nephew's birth, and I cannot miss my second nephew's birth, I thought. And this isn't just really for my nephew, but it's for my sister who was giving birth. So who gave birth. By the time I arrived, she already gave birth. But so yeah, so I had to, I knew I had to go through a 7 day quarantine. And everybody's travel was different for sure. And one of the things that did stand out to me, when there are many things that stood out to me, one of the things that stood out to me was how bureaucracy really is slow to respond to change. And what I mean by this is the example that I went through, the experience that I went through that kind of reminded me of this was how I flew with Korean Air. But before flying with Korean Air, you have to follow guidance. You know, with COVID, one of the things that you had to observe was getting a PCR test and a negative PCR test. And in this, I think it was like 48 hours before you board or something like that. So I looked up getting a PCR test, and it was, to my surprise, I guess there was the PCR test, the standard PCR test, and the RT-PCR test. The PCR test, maybe I should have just gone with it, but my hesitation with that was like, some of the tests provided results within like 3 days. And I think the guideline that I had to observe was 48 hours. So 3 days was not going to cut it for me. But there was a version called the RT-PCR test, which promised a lot, a faster timeline within 48 hours, if not sooner. So I wanted to take the RT-PCR test. But I didn't know if that was like the PCR test. Like the Korean Air, the guidelines I was reading, it didn't say like, an RT-PCR test is also acceptable. No, it just said PCR test. So I talked to someone from Korean Air, and it was probably a customer service person or somebody who worked at the airline. And then they couldn't give me a straight answer right away. I think they did some digging. I was on hold for a little bit, and then they came back and they told me an RT-PCR test is not a PCR test. So it was like not acceptable. And that turned out to be inaccurate because I just ended up taking the RT-PCR test. I just surmised that there's no way that an institution that whose advertised purpose is to provide documentation of a PCR test that is valid to travel is, and this is probably, I think this is what this company was around for like 2 years or something. There's no way a company that falsely advertises something can stay around for 2 years. So I surmise that they must be, you know, what they're doing must be successful if they're running, if they have been doing that for 2 years. So I just took the RT-PCR test, relying on just the assumption that I don't know how to, I'm struggling at phrasing this, but business success means some validity to the product that they're providing. So drawing from that, I was confident that the RT-PCR test would do, and it did. It did work, and I was able to board the plane, and I flew to Korea. But all this to say that, you know, this, the fact that somebody from Korean Air, who's supposed to be the one implementing the rules and advising customers on the rules, didn't know the rules really. They didn't know fully the parameters of the rules, and this is particularly the PCR test one. That to me showed that bureaucracy within Korean Air was very slow to respond to change and to fully adapt to that change. Like, I don't know when travel opened up, but maybe it was like a year ago, I guess a year ago since when I traveled, but all their personnel was not equipped to inform customers about the rules, about the details of the rules. So, yeah, bureaucracy is slow to respond to change, and I was a recipient of that that drawback. Right. So, I was able to, you know, I was able to fly to Korea though, and then I got there, had to quarantine, and I stayed in an Airbnb, and this was my first residence, I guess, I was in a Korean residence I was in 2.5 years. And, you know, I've been living in an apartment in California during the pandemic. And one of the things I kind of didn't like was how loud these forced heat. When you get cold, you turn on the heat air machine thing. I don't call it air conditioning, but it also does air conditioning. So anyway, I had a wall unit and it just pushed out air. And hot air, and that's how you heated up the apartment. Like those things really dry up there, I thought. And two, it's pretty loud. But in Korea, the residences, the apartments and the residences, they have heated floors. So one, they're quiet, and then two, it feels nice on your feet when you land, when you step on it. And then three, it just heats up the place without blowing like dry air into your face. So that was really nice. I really appreciated that about the Airbnb. And the Airbnb I was at was at a countryside. It's like 5 hours away from Seoul. And I had a nice view of the ocean. Food was different. The spinach. It's apparently famous for its spinach. And I did notice a difference. It was a little more, the spinach there was a little more lush and fuller and thicker, I guess, than the spinach I would have in Seoul. And then there's a lot of seafood there. There's this like enlarged clam, kind of. We call it gomak in Korea. And I had like the seasoning with, I think the seasoning was probably some sort of like hot pepper paste in Korean gochujang. And then soy sauce, probably. Sesame oil, I imagine, maybe some like green onion and sesame seeds, and just put it on that clam. I had that now several times. It was good, and the fish was good, fried fish. Yeah, the kind of fish that you have in the States and the kind of fish that you have in the States is different. I think we eat more mackerel, probably some croaker here in like Costco, especially like the fish that they sell. It's like cod. Maybe they sell halibut too. But yeah, the fry, those are a little bit more flavorless to me. But the fish in Korea and the fish that I had in the countryside, a lot more flavorful. Yes. Anyway, so going back to the Korean residence and some of the features that I thought was very desirable, very nice, especially relative to the States. The heated floor. Then I mean that was huge. That was really nice. Oh, what else? Oh, the difference. I don't know if this is a positive feature. I mean, at first when I was in that residence taking a shower, I didn't think that was a nice feature of the bathroom. But I think later on I appreciated it because, I mean, the bathrooms in Korea, many of the residences, they don't have like a separate compartment within the bathroom for showering. Like there's no shower curtain, there's no divider, there's no bathtub formally separating the floor of the shower area from the overall bathroom. Like there's just one floor and one material of the floor, one type material type for the floor, spanning both the toilet, not both, but spanning the toilet, the sink, the shower. So there's no divider, so water just splashes all over the place when you take a shower. But the thing I appreciated about that was it kind of like washes the floors, and then the material of the floor is in one that like is amenable to catching mold, it seems. So that was nice, and you could just naturally wash the floors with your shower and with a shower head. And you can kind of detach the shower head and just clean the shower out of the floor yourself too. So it just made it really efficient to clean. And then Yeah, there was yeah. I was so used to having like a divider for my shower that I thought it was necessary, but it really wasn't. I mean, as long as you wherever you put your toothbrush, as long as you put it out of like the shower water trajectory's way, and just take a shower, it kind of would splash on the sink. I mean, it's not bad. You don't you kind of wash the sink, you kind of wash the toilet seat maybe a little bit too. Well, if you put this to the toilet lid, at least if you put the toilet lid down, and yeah, I thought it was efficient, and I think that was a positive feature. And because there was no divider, the floor, the material for the floor in the bathroom, just had to be one that the water would glide across the floor, and then would clear to that drainage area easily, and I think probably one that doesn't catch mold easily. So the bathroom floor was nice too. So I think it was a positive feature overall. Yeah, so not having a shower divider was a positive feature, I think. But yeah, so that was like that's the those are like features regarding the Korean residents. But I was in the countryside. You know, the I think a big difference between the countryside and Seoul was that in Seoul there's a little bit more what we call bisamonji. I think it's like air dust. I don't know what the official translation is, but it's something that contributes to the bad air quality in Seoul many times. And then even before the pandemic, people would wear masks so that they would ward off of that dust. But the one of the things I realized in Seoul was that the skies aren't always like very clear. Even though it's like sunny, and it's not like cloudy necessarily, but it's not the skies aren't like that clear. But in the countryside, when it's only 5 hours away, the skies were clearer. So that was, yeah, I think as a place to quarantine, I think that was a good choice. Because I can't go out anyway, might as well see a clear sky while you're quarantining. And I had a good ocean view too. Yeah, and in Seoul, I guess at the moment you step out, you'd probably be hit with people, you see a lot of people, but if you step out of my Airbnb to take a walk, you barely see any people. There were some dogs barking here and there. I did, there was one time I was taking a walk, the dog was barking, and I got scared a little bit because the dog had no leash. There's no owner in sight. I thought the dog might be hostile, so I turned the other way and then went back home. Anyway, that's my small episode with dogs. I do have a puppy. And yeah, I'm not scared of my puppy, of course, but that I think it was owned. I think that it had an owner, but it almost looked like a wild dog as well. So I turned back. But anyway, again, so there was not a lot of people. There were some cars passing by, but it was not that populous. So you that there was some peace there that helped make the Airbnb peaceful, but I guess lonelier as well. Had to bring my Chromecast. I'm glad I brought my Chromecast, so because there was no Netflix on the TV, and I was able to watch some Netflix because of my Chromecast. I did work from the while I was quarantining, so I had nothing to do. I did work. While I was quarantining, I was very uncomfortable. There was like this. I usually have like a monitor set up, but while I was working, I had to work just straight from a laptop. I think there are still people that just work straight from a laptop. Like they don't use a lot. They don't use a separate keyboard. They don't use a monitor. But kudos to those people. Like I don't know if I can go back to. Oh, actually, if I have to, I'm sure I can go back, but. Wow, it is so much more uncomfortable just working just straight off of a laptop than having a monitor, and having a separate mouse. Yeah, I think I work like two times faster with a monitor and a mouse. Serious, truly. Any performance merit that I received and the recognition that I received, I think I must attribute it to like the ergonomic setup and having like this more expanded setup of monitor and a mouse. Truly, really, I really believe that. It just really it helps with the speed of things. Anyway, I worked during quarantine, was not that comfortable. But yeah, I survived through it. It was good. I enjoyed the experience. Luckily, it was only 7 days, and it was enough days that I could still find myself enjoying many aspects of the quarantine. After the quarantine, I went to Seoul, and this was like my real vacation time. I'm sure there's like a lot of details to share. One thing that it is definitely worth mentioning is just how cheap the food was, and it didn't like skimp out on quality and quantity. The portion sizes were good, and it tasted great. You could get a good meal for like $8. And coming from California, where like the food was like $20 or something, so almost three times more expensive. Oh, that I just appreciated that so much on a daily basis, because you eat food every day. So that it's a difference that you'd appreciate every day. And then in California, in Korea, there's no tip included. Taxes don't seem to be like, that's not an additional expense. A lot of meals will be like round numbers. In California, you're going to like see, oh yeah, the meal itself on the menu is like $16.50 or whatever it is, and they tack on tax, and that doesn't become a round number, and then there's tip as well. It easily becomes like over $20. So if you go to Korea, I'm telling you, the food, you're not just going to appreciate the quality of the food and how different the cuisine is, but just how just the ratio of quality plus quantity over price is just unmatched, especially with California. Yeah, the food is just more generous to people. Yeah, food comes more generously in Korea than it does in the States, especially California. Great food, including the price. One weird feature, and I think this is just a cultural drawback, especially during the pandemic and keeping people protected from other people, is that when you go to restaurants, there's like a shared utensil box. Utensils aren't served individually to every person, and then they're not separated out like by individual. So what I mean is, if you come down, sit, you will get your food, but to get your utensils, you take the utensils out of the shared utensil box, which is has like tens, hundreds of utensils, hundreds of spoons maybe, and I don't know about hundreds, maybe 70, 80 spoons, and then chopsticks as well, and you reach your hand in it. And then before you, there was another customer that took utensils from the utensil box to eat their meal. Then after you, there's going to be another customer that comes in and takes utensils from the utensil box to eat their meal. So you just have this shared contact object, and in a period of a disease that is highly contagious, and I think can be transmitted through contact. I say I think because I don't know if it's. I think there was something I read about how the likelihood of transmitting COVID through surfaces is not as high. I don't know if that's true, but regardless, the concept of shared contact, I'm sure, increases the chances of transmitting the disease, especially a highly contagious one like COVID. And that was kind of shocking to me to see that how that cultural, Korea's been like this since I've known Korea. Yeah. So, but it's like a cultural staple to have a shared utensil box, but to allow that to perpetuate, even during this health crisis, that was not great. That was not a great look. But yeah, it reminded me of the thing I read in Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, where Korean Air had a poor history of airline safety. There was back then, the Korean Air was one of the worst with regard to airline crashes and airline safety. One of the reasons was because culturally we have like this reluctance to defy authority. And there was like one incident that the Outliers of the book was examining where there was an interaction between the captain and like the people that were supporting the captain and the crew. And although they were seeing something wrong, they were reluctant to defy authority, the superior, and letting them know that there's something wrong with the flight path, that there's some obstacles on the way. And that eventually led to the plane crash. One plane crash. It was like one example. But there was this reluctance to authority that Korean culturally has generally had that led to a fatal event, a terrible event. Example of culture leading to something very detrimental. And that was something that was portrayed in Outliers. And I thought this shared utensil box in restaurants was another example of how a cultural artifact or cultural concept led to the detriment of people and our health. So that's a shared utensil box. I'm sure there's some other things that I can mention, but my neck. Anyway, that's about restaurants. I mean, you know, I mean, there's so many things I can talk about regarding like the facilities there, church, public transportation. The food delivery apps, because you can't go to restaurants as much sometimes, especially when I had to quarantine. Food delivery apps would have been great, but I don't think the food delivery apps are very friendly to foreigners. Because if you want to order conveniently from food delivery apps and many food delivery apps, you have to have a Korean phone number generally. And I did not really have a Korean phone number. I used my mom's cell phone to register for things. And then you also have to have a Korean credit card. You're not going to have, if you're a foreigner traveling, if you're a tourist, you're not going to get a Korean credit card. But there is an option for Korean delivery food service apps where you can pay when you get the food delivered to you. So you can then use your foreign credit card to then pay. But it's just a little bit more work because you have to step out, you know, give your card to the deliverer, and then they submit the transaction for you, the process transaction for you, and then then you get your meal. It's not like a big step, but just less convenient. And I think that's a big difference. If you had to choose between an app that required that and an app that didn't require that, obviously you go to the app that didn't require that, and then you multiply that by like millions of people who are going to also prefer that. That is a significant difference. That's a small difference. Multiply that by millions of people, and that's obviously going to be a huge competitive advantage for the business that makes it more convenient to you, even if it's a slight convenience. Food delivery service apps could be friendly to foreigners, I thought. The real treat about going to Seoul was meeting my friends, meeting my family, seeing my nephew, seeing my sister after a long time. Wow. Seeing my sister, how much her life has really moved. And then seeing my mom, I got to spend an extra week with my mom because we got COVID together. So, I mean, that was such a precious time for me. I think I'm a mama's boy at the core. I don't listen to my mom really, but seeing her smile, seeing her laugh, that just made me happy. So that was really a treat too. It was a treat to have that time with her, and it was rare. Like I said, I only visit my family generally like once a year. And even then I won't spend like 24/7 with my mom because I'll like go out and do something. But this time we did have to spend 24/7, and it was great if it was warm. So I spent additional time with my mom. Got to see her laugh, got to see her smile. Definitely not a feeling that is replicable. Is that a word? But you get the point. So yeah, spend time with family, which was very nice. Spend time with my mom and dad, both of them as well. Had a lot of conversations in the car. Cars are important. Some really nice conversations happen in the car. So, yeah. We talk about like locations and like static places, like restaurants and whatnot, but cars, those are also places where memories are made. Spent time with my friends. I had this thing that I thought of, and there was like, space and time are like the dimensions of the universe. So you can say like the universe is a function of space and time. Yeah. Equivalently, my universe, I think, is a function of my space and my time. And, time just, I think, compounds the reality that you're like time compounds how embedded your space becomes into your reality, aka your universe. That's one way that I describe it, but my universe and going back to my universe is a function of my space and my time. That was something I truly felt. The universe that I felt that I was in while I was in Korea was so different, just because I was around friends that were from my childhood, and they there's just this like this foundation of familiarity of like we just know each other so much better than I. And you may with like an acquaintance that you've known for like 2 or 3 years, that a conversation flows so much more smoothly and your interaction flows so much more smoothly with so much less reservation and so much more freer. And those are different relationships. So they're much deeper relationships and friendships. And that really characterizes kind of my space, my universe a little bit. And then my parents, in California, I have no parents. I have no family around me. No blood related family around me. So going to Korea and being around family is just completely different from the reality that I have in the States. So it really was a different universe. My space was different. And then, like I said, I haven't spent more than 2 weeks generally in Korea, but this time I spent 4 weeks in Korea. So compound the space that I was in by the amount of time that I spent there, just really deepened the kind of reality that I was submerged in while I was in Korea. And that became my universe, you know, so different than the universe that I had in the States. And that's because in the States, my space is different. And when I came back to the States, I missed Korea. There were many elements I missed, but after time passed in the space that I was in the States, in the familiar space and the original space I was in with going back to work, talking to coworkers, spending time with my girlfriend, being around my puppy, working on my different hobbies, and over time, that then replaced the reality that I was submerged in before. And I really just followed that formula. My universe is a function of my space and my time. Give it time, and then your space then becomes embedded into the reality that you get more and more submerged in as a function of time. I missed my mom when I came back to the States, but the sad or maybe just the natural reality was that after time, I got used to not spending as much time as I did with my mom. It was such a happy time, but just force of time, as with the force of the passage of time, compounded by the space that you're around. No, it's not the way around. The space that you're around compounded by time just replaces whatever reality you had before and becomes a universe. It just seems to be some sort of like natural perception law of like natural law of perception and the perception of reality. That's kind of how that's really characterized and summarizes my experience of then spending time in Korea and coming back here. It was tough coming back here at first, but it got better afterwards. I think I repeated that quite a bit. So let's move away from that. I don't think I spent enough time talking about the time I spent with my friends. I mean, I told you about this, like, the sense of familiarity that you have with your friends that you can just talk so freely. It's surprising how it just doesn't go away. Even though I haven't seen my friends in like 3 years, like those friends, that foundation is just there. The body remembers, the mind remembers. I also just appreciate how these are friends that know how to poke your buttons, the good and the bad ones. And because they know how to poke your buttons, you just become so immersed and so invested emotionally in the interactions that you have with your friends. And I don't know if that's not the same thing as being the present moment, or is it? But I was like very emotionally present at the moment because of that quality thing. They know how to push your buttons, the good and the bad. And you also have that for me, like it's the freedom. Just, you don't have to observe formalities about like as much hurting the other person's feelings. You know the parameters that you cannot violate with your friends, maybe, but there's, it's not that. Just, I don't know, familiarity makes you so aware of how you interact with your friends that familiarity then is the illusion of freedom, because you're just so familiar. You just feel like things are so easy and therefore so free. But it might be because it's familiar, not necessarily because you really don't. There's no lines that you can't cross. It might just be familiarity. But I mean, regardless, it just felt so much easier. And then so it looked like the conversations that I wanted to have, the subject matters that interested us both or us, however many people there were, I could engage in. And that was nice. It was warm. I mentioned this before, but it was a warm feeling being around those people and those friends. And it made me think, it made me wonder if life really is about being around people that you love. Because I can imagine myself being so much happier if I had those friends around me. And I wished maybe they were nearby, but in Korea, so like the different, there's a difference of sentiments I felt. While in Korea, there was a sentiment of spending time finding true joy and significant and sufficient joy in with your family and with your friends. But in the States, I just get more of a sense of like striving for your goals. There's opportunities here, and then you must capitalize on your opportunities. Like you are the master of your own success, like that kind of culture. Like I buy into that culture a little bit more. But in Korea, I didn't feel that as much. And maybe it's because I was in vacation and I was in vacation mode, but the driving forces of the lifestyle I was leading between Korea and the States was just starkly different. It really was a different universe. Yeah. But between the two, I think one made me happier, at least temporarily, because Korea was only 4 weeks, and I was happier in Korea in many ways. But here in the States, there's something about the States that I think made me feel a little bit more fulfilled. And if you explore that a little bit, what generates the sense of fulfillment is a question that I would have. And like I said, there was this culture that I buy into more in the States of like trying hard and like striving for your goals. In that, in that scenario, there's this idea of a struggle. Maybe a struggle adds to the sense of fulfillment. Sense of striving. And I mentioned this to my friend in Korea. Like, I feel like in Korea, the opportunities are much less. The ceiling for your dreams are lower. And that's something I didn't really like about Korea. And I think my friends overall admitted that. I think the States does a much better job of that. On average, the States does a better job of that on average. And I think, you know, on an individual level, there are some individuals that really are not going to feel that way, that the opportunities are limitless in Korea. But on average, I think that my friends agreed, I think. So, yeah, that part of having these opportunities capped a little bit, having your dreams capped, that's not something I didn't like, that I didn't really like about Korea. But success or fulfillment and happiness, I think I realized can be independent. You can find happiness, true happiness, I think. I really do think, with your friends and your family. But if you don't fulfill your dreams, would you be truly happy? And I don't think so. Yeah, perhaps maybe only partial happiness then with your friends and family. You know, fulfillment, I guess, is the other part that you need to get closer to completing your happiness. At least those are my thoughts. And I don't know if Korea would have offered that to me. Like I said, there, I feel like the dreams and opportunities would be a little bit more capped. But in the States, they aren't as capped. I don't feel as capped. I feel like there's so much more freedom for me. And it's the barrier to hitting my goals. A lot of them are really just me putting in the effort. That's the barrier. Can I put in the effort? But spending time in Korea really made me feel greedy, or I really wanted to have... I just realized how much I was missing out by not having like close friends around me and my family around me. It was such a precious time. It just pulled an identity out of me that I don't really express in the States. And that's not really a function of Korea, but more a function of where my friends are. So selfishly, if my friends were also in the States and my family was also in the States, that paints a very happy life, I think. But yeah, I feel like I have forward nostalgia, like what, or like this hopefulness, or what could be, what could happen. What was that? Is that called wishful thinking, perhaps? Anyway, those are my rambling thoughts. I think I should conclude my journal. This was a solo episode. I hope it was somewhat enjoyable and maybe a little bit more intimate. Thanks for listening. I will do more podcasts going forward. I took a 6-week break, and I think it's I want to get back into it. So stay tuned. There will be more episodes. And if you enjoyed my podcast, don't forget to subscribe, and I'll talk to you guys later. See ya.